Pirate's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You'll be in touch with the show. Text me and let me know what's on your mind. Shane Shearer, you're coming up in about 30 minutes from now. A little bit of news with Representative Stringer, particularly dealing with the permitless / constitutional carry law he sponsored a couple of years ago. Obviously, our sheriff here would like to alter that, but he is, Representative Stringer, very skeptical of those efforts. We'll talk about that with him and some other things coming up in about 30 minutes. Dell Jackson, WVNN Yellowhammer News. We'll be there in his usual 10:30 spot. And then you can blame him for this radio show or any other of my journalistic opportunities that have come around that I have seized upon at about the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour from Lanyap Mobile. Rob Holbert will be with us. So be sure to stay right where you are. Text line 251-343-0106. Let us know what's on your mind if you so choose. Well, there's a you sense this creeping panic. I think suddenly Democrats don't do really well with this either. And maybe it's because they don't play from behind a whole lot. But you sense a creeping panic over where the state of the race is. So there's a lot of polls out there. The trend is for Trump right now, okay? Just as it was earlier for Vice President Harris, it shifted back in Trump's direction. We knew it would at some point, but, I mean, it'll shift back in her direction. It probably shift back the other way at least once or twice more. If you keep up with this stuff, you're probably familiar with a guy named Nate Silver. Runs the, I believe it's the 538 blog. And how many, countless stories have been done about Nate Silver's prognostications for this race. He is very, right now, He's very bullish on Donald Trump. And I think some people are kind of about that. They're not real thrilled about that on the left. They're not really even talking about it. But what's going on here, you may ask? So just to catch you up here, Trump has a 60% chance of winning the Electoral College compared to Vice President Harris's 39.7%. Silver's model has it 277 to 260 in the Electoral College. And you look at, well, the polls don't really suggest that. Polls suggest something completely different. It shows Trump from behind, or it shows him with a very, very small lead. Well, how many of you watch, like, poker on television or play it, or and you look at when they deal and they have the percentages right next to each hand, if you're familiar with that at all? And that's sort of what's going on here, because there's a bunch of different hands that Trump could still play. He's got a bunch of outs here, I guess is the way to put it. Whereas Kamala Harris, if you look at her, you look at Biden in 2020, they got maybe a shot at flipping one state that they didn't get in 2020, and that, maybe that's North Carolina. Whereas Trump could flip a bunch of states. I mean, you look at he's Arizona, obviously, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia. It's sort of like this. Right now, Harris is a good hand, but she has to draw just the right cards to get that inside, that straight or that to get that flush or whatever it is that she needs to have the top hand. And there are a lot of possibilities for Trump laying there before him. So think of it that way. It's like a poker hand, and while Harris right now has a good hand, she has to draw just the exact right precise cards to win the hand. Trump's got a bunch of other options that he could, that would have give him the winning hand. And that's sort of where this is right now. I think that's the Nate Silver. It's not like New York Times poll saying that the two were tied in the popular vote. It's going to be an electoral college blowout if that's the case. So with that, let's put that aside. Well, not we put it aside, but let's, you know, that is a reality of the state of the presidential election. You could tell it's starting to kind of pick up in Democrat media circles in particular. I think the best outcome for tomorrow's debate, everybody's expecting a gotcha moment for Trump or for Harris. I think it's going to be one of these Rorschach tests. It's not going to do anything. In all likelihood, because this is how these debates typically go. No one looks back at debates and says, oh, wow, that really changed the state of the race, with the exception of Joe Biden earlier this year. It's just like you're sitting in your recliner tomorrow night watching this thing. You're probably not going to be moved either way. You're probably going to stick to where you are. And so on and so forth. So what, I mean, I guess that some of us in the media, both right and left leaning media, are anticipating like the gotcha, you know, moment, some kind of Reagan moment or something to that effect. But I don't think so. Just for the sake of this discussion, I mean, it could, but you're probably going to watch it and you're probably not going to have your mind changed at all. (251) 343-0106 is how you get in touch with the program. How you feeling about it? Good, bad, indifferent. If you're indifferent at this point, why are you listening to this show, by the way? And I would like to know that. Let's see here. The Haitian discussion is really getting bigger. I mean, we have it here in Alabama with the Haitian migrants. They're kind of just scattering these Haitians around the country, it seems. There's a bunch of memes out there mocking, like, I guess there was a report in Ohio of one of the some woman claimed that one of these Haitian migrants ate her cat, and no one's really able to verify this, but it has instigated a bunch of memes. I mean, this is why it's the big, I guess kind of the silly irony of it is Vance talking about childless cat ladies, yet it is the Biden-Harris administration that has made it possible for a group of people to be here that might look at your cat as some kind of delicacy. If that's that's really a thing, if that really happened. Now I was told that they're probably eating birds, Canadian geese or whatever. That's just what they do in Haiti. They don't have a stable food supply, so they're eating some of the birds. Clearly not assimilating to the local customs of just eating strange cuts of meat are strange. Maybe not strange, but just stuff we don't eat here. But the more they try to scatter this around, and it seems like you're hearing this a lot from sort of red states. I mean, it's going to pick up at some point. Here in Alabama, and I last week was guest hosting up in Birmingham, Sylacauga, the latest to feel the brunt of this immigration. We heard reports at Athens, up in North Alabama, my old stomping ground, by the way, where WVNN is, and also in Albertville, where that's really where the news has been generated about this. And the thing is, it's kind of disappointing. It's no one's able to offer any answers about what is DHS doing this, or are they dropping these Haitians off in Miami and they just picked a place at random in Alabama? Like, what's going on here? Now there's, I think, the incentive here for them to get work in Alabama, particularly these poultry processing plants. That seems to be the that seems to be the draw in Albertville. No one knows why Sylacauga. Sylacauga is in Talladega County, about 45 minutes to the southeast of Birmingham. It's between Birmingham and on the Auburn-Opelika area. If you drive in 280, you go right through Sylacauga. And folks there, I mean, I'm not really sure how to handle it. As I said, the state lawmaker there, Ben Robbins, talked to him about it, and they're kind of scattered around Talladega County, but no one's getting any answers. Are there more coming? Do we need to prepare? Do we need to find some French Creole translators? What do we need to do here? But it's that kind of stuff that really gets people. You have this start coming up in an election cycle. It seems like a strange occurrence. Maybe you just keep these folks in a camp somewhere in South Florida and wait till the election's over. But the more of these stories that kind of trickle out, I think the more it's going to potentially hurt Democrats in 2024, on November 5th, I should say. You got to think about it. If it's Coleman, Albertville, and Athens in the 5th Congressional District, you'll see Albertville in the 4th, and Sylacauga, I think, is in the 3rd, Mike Rogers District. What if they start showing up somewhere in AL2? There's not many swing places in AL2. Let's say they start showing up in, like, Greenville, Alabama. Or Evergreen. Or Luverne. Or even, like, Phoenix City. What does it do to Shamari Figures' chance? Could it be happening? Or are they looking around on the map saying, hey, let's not put these migrants here, whoever makes these decisions within government, if they're making them at all? Text line 251-343-0106. But that remains a big story for now. Governor says she doesn't know what's going on. The mayor says he's hearing from the governor, so there's a contradiction there. The mayor of Sylacauga, that is. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5. Ain't nobody looking back again.
Send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down
the line. Welcome back to the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5. drive. Thank you for sticking around on this Monday morning. Come up in the next segment. Shane Stringer, a good friend from Citronelle, lawmaker and police chief in Creola. 251-343-0106. If you need to get in touch with the show, utilize a text line. Doesn't have Meta. Imagine that. Jeff Poore brings degenerate gambling in to explain politics. I would expect nothing less. Well, perhaps. But apparently, if you watch ESPN, it is considered a sport. Just saying. The World Series of Poker, often on the airwaves there. Terry, when you see the Dems flying anti-Trump ads over a Michigan football game in Ann Arbor, you know they are scared. Are they just maybe there's a kook fringe element there? I find these people who fly these planes over stadiums with these messages. There was a guy named Stan Payton Tuscaloosa that does it. It's just kind of cringe. But I think they are. I wouldn't say scared, but I do think they're concerned. And it's this, guys. I said this 2 weeks ago. And people are like, you're not right about this. But what about her campaign? What about what they are doing in their strategy makes you think they can win? It's like, it's sort of like Auburn fans, right? We start the season anew. We are very optimistic. You get a good 77-0 or 3 or whatever it was blowout. And now you think you can win it all. Well, Kamala Harris starts anew. You get the good bounce, and suddenly it makes it look like the right decision that she's on her way to winning the presidential election. And then reality sits in. You face an opponent that's not the pushover. You face an opponent that's not, and that's, you know, the way Auburn fans kind of looked at Cal is sort of how Democrats in the media are looking at Trump right now. The reality is we're going to find that Kamala Harris just isn't that good. Sort of like we found out the Auburn quarterback just isn't that good. The entire Auburn team, I don't know. Despite the home crowd cheering and all the white and, the home cook in there. Despite the media cheering, we're going to find out that this is not a good campaign. It's lacking a lot of things. It's lacking a coherent message. It's lacking the any sort of atonement or any sort of explanation for their candidates' previous statements that are far, far left. And at the end of the day, the ceiling's already there. There's no way to move that ceiling up. You hit your ceiling way too early. You got to put Trump aside and then just look at that campaign and tell me it's a good campaign, and you can't. It's sort of like this. It's like always comparing Alabama and Auburn, always comparing themselves to one another, but they play a bunch of other games on the schedule, and they're just not, neither one is as good as they used to be. Toothless Bamber, the Haitian story with the cat only proves there is no legal assimilating. Illegals assimilating. Coming soon near you, a Haitian food market. I don't know what that would entail.
First thing I remember,
voodoo or something.
Was a lonesome whistle blow.
Text line, once again, 251-343-0106. Shane Stringer coming up in the next segment. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Moore Show. on FM Talk 106.5.
And no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the songs that you wrote? Over and over, everybody made my prediction. So if I get stoned, I'm just carrying.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me, and we will proceed accordingly. Still to come on the program here in about an hour, we'll talk to Dell Jackson, WVNN, and Yellhammer News. And in 2 hours, Rob Holbert, and we'll talk about this. It's kind of an oddity the way this Department of Veterans Affairs at the state level is being handled by the governor, by obviously the dismissed ethics complaint, and get everybody kind of up to date. And I'll give you my thoughts on that here in a moment, but I feel like I'm not really dealing with the entirety of that story. But joining us now on the line, he is the he represents you guys in North Mobile County, some of you guys across the bay in Baldwin County, but he's also the police chief up in Creola, State Representative Shane Stringer. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. How are you, Jeff?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for coming on. We always appreciate your time. Well, let's kick it off here. And then you and I talked a little bit about it last week, but kind of out of nowhere, and I don't know if John Sharp was just cold calling looking for something here, but Sheriff Birch looking to alter the permitless carry, constitutional carry law that you guys passed a few years back. You're not really keen on this, it seems, but walk us through, like, maintaining the status quo seems to be where you want to stay.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to help, you know, anything to do with law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement for 33 years, and, you know, I don't think that changing the age is going to affect that. I mean, we already have laws dealing with rape, robbery, murder, everything else. The ones that are not going to follow the laws are not going to follow them, and I don't think that we should take the rights of law-abiding gun owners away just so we can arrest a few gun criminals.
Well, I guess it's this, that they want the ability for, or at least an enhanced ability for some kind of probable cause or whatever they need to do, because I think it's just kind of, they're trying to draw this correlation or whatever, but I don't think it's necessarily there is one there. That with this law being in effect where it is, and then this crime wave we sort of see in a lot of Alabama's bigger cities.
Yeah, you know, and I don't blame Sheriff Burks for thinking outside the box or trying to do whatever, but the fact is, man, when you stop these cars at 3 a.m. and got a car full of teenagers, and it ain't like the only thing that they're doing wrong is having a gun in the car. Almost every time the car reeks of marijuana or either alcohol, there's no tag, suspended tag, switch tag. You know, there's always problems there that give you probable cause to address that situation and that group of problematic teenagers or even adults. You know, cops work, and they've been doing this. They know what to do and what to look for. And the fact is, the ones that they're trying to get, you know, they can get, because their car is going to smell of marijuana. It's going to be no plates, no insurance. There's lots of reasons to address the problematic people, and that's what we need to do instead of trying to take the rights away from law-abiding gun owners so we can arrest a few thugs with guns.
Yeah, and, you know, we used to talk about this like this, that there was a, a financial incentive for these sheriffs to oppose the permitless carry because they were making money selling these gun permits. But in this circumstance, I mean, that's not necessarily true, wanting this tweak. But I tell you what, the point here, I guess, we need to talk about, Representative, is why you passed a bill, why you believe the Second Amendment says what it says. And if you start going down this path, right, it becomes eats at the justification to begin with.
Correct. You know, the thing is, man, the Second Amendment don't mention anything about a permit or getting permission from a sheriff to carry a gun. And, you know, we have seen over the last 10 years or so where Alabama lost their NICS exemption to where law-abiding citizens could go purchase a gun. And if you had a permit, that was you were exempt from having to run the background when you purchased the gun and wait the period of time to get it. Well, the ATF came in and audited the Alabama sheriffs twice, and both times they found a large number of sheriffs were not even running the background checks and just selling permits, you know, taking the money and selling the permits. And in doing so, there were a lot of felons that got permits that people were not supposed to have permits. In return, those people that had those permits were able to go in and purchase guns where they could normally not have purchased that gun because they were prohibited. So, you know, we've seen a lot of problems with the permitting system, and they really came to light over the last 10 years. You know, we had 67 counties with 67 different looking permits, and you couldn't really tell, you know, there was no booklet or pamphlet for law enforcement to show what the permits should look like. And a person could have a fake permit or a counterfeit permit, and you didn't even know that. Most of your permit offices were only open from 8 to 5 in the afternoons. And so if an officer stopped somebody after hours or on weekends, they had no way to even determine if the permit was still valid. All they could do was take it at face value. And in doing that, you had people that were prohibited that had an old permit or something that was able to drive away with the gun still that shouldn't have. So, you know, there was a lot of problems with the permitting system that kind of led up to this on top of it just being a constitutional right from the get-go.
This sudden push for changing this law, I think it's not really reading the room. I just don't think there's any appetite for it, and I can't imagine your colleagues in the Alabama legislature even wanting to touch this right now. What's behind all this? I mean, you hear it a lot. You hear it a lot in places where there is the crime situation, but this seems like to be the fallback or the default position. Hey, if we didn't have this law on the books, things would be a lot safer around here, you know, and I don't think people are necessarily buying it, but is it just a scapegoat, or do you think people really think that they could make a change here?
I really don't know, Jeff. I know that, you know, if it's a money situation, I know that we put the grant in place for sheriffs to apply if they lost money or whatever. And I know for a fact that's not depleted yet. So, you know, it's still money there to be gotten. So if it's a money issue, it's there. The other is, you know, a lot of cities and counties and around the state and country have defunded the police or not supporting the law enforcement community like they should, which has led to problems in recruiting, hiring, and retention. So they're shorthanded. And, you know, and then you got a lot where they're going in and they're not policing the problematic areas. I mean, we've got predictive policing where we've got computer programs that will tell us where the majority of the crimes are taking place and kind of helps us to saturate those areas versus spinning our wheels and wasting resources. So, you know, I think if we would focus on that and quit worrying about the politically correct, and let's police some of these areas, no matter what race they are in their communities, I think that we would be a lot better off and address the problems.
joined by Shane Stringer. He's a state lawmaker from Citronelle. Representative, the other thing, what do you make of this to happen in Montgomery where they passed their own requirements here that you got to have a photo ID or whatever if you want to carry a gun? I mean, that kind of defies the spirit of the law you guys passed, and it's sort of a strange approach.
Yeah, and I think that their attorneys are probably going to be tickled to death with that because they're going to make a lot of money trying to defend the city over the lawsuits and the challenges that come with that. It's unconstitutional. It's not going to stick. It's not going to uphold. And, you know, I don't know if they really believe that it was going to work or is feasible, or if it was just kind of throwing it in our face, the legislature's face or something. But either way, it's just going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money and is not going to accomplish nothing. You know, the fact is, a lot of these Democrat cities and others have got to quit trying to find excuses to why they can't do their job and find reasons why they can. You know, I've talked to sheriffs across the country when I first passed this legislation, even before I passed this legislation, and every one of them said, Representative Stringer, we're law enforcement. We are very resourceful. We will find ways to protect our communities within the scope of the law, and that's what we do.
Now, I don't expect you to be an expert on any of these cities, and every city has its, you know, problems, but and they are maybe addressed differently. But we'll say tomorrow they hire you to be the police chief in Montgomery, Alabama. What do you do first there? Or how do you even go about straightening that situation out?
It's going to take a process, but first thing you do is get out and find your community leaders and in every part of the city and work with them to find legal and proper ways to address the crime in their area, which is the same I've done in the other cities I've been police chief. And almost every one that I've been in, you've always got your elders in your community, even the minority communities that want you in there keeping law and order. That is the primary function of government, is law and order. So you reach out to them and you find, get support from them and work on it. You start building your reputation back up and building up the camaraderie and the morale in your department, and you just slowly but surely rebuild it back up. And it's going to take time because of what's happened, but taking law enforcement out of some of these minority areas or problematic areas or whatever is not the solution. You have got to have proactive policing in our communities. And like I tell everybody, there's a thin line between policing your community and harassing your community. And you definitely want to make sure you're not harassing your community. So there's ways that it can be done under the proper leadership. And, you know, maybe Montgomery needs to find somebody that's willing to make excuses why they can, or reasons why they can do their job instead of excuses why they can't.
Well, how about this? So is there, you're sitting here today, when you guys get back next year in Montgomery for session, and you know, what's left to be done at the state level? Well, I mean, can you pass any more laws? Is there, you know, could you see what Reed Ingram and Barfoot want to do with, like, imposing some kind of, like, Alabama Accountability Act? But that seems to be kind of mixed. I don't know if something like that could get through. Are there any remedies? And if so, what?
Well, I think first and foremost, we've got to address mental health. Mental health is the root of all problems. I mean, we've seen it with the Georgia school shooter and in other areas across the country. I mean, we've got to address that. And if we can address that, that's going to take care of a lot of it. But, you know, we're going to see a lot of legislation come anti-gun, in my opinion, that going to blame the gun for the problem. It's not the gun, it's the people. I mean, people with an evil heart are going to find a way to inflict harm in some shape, form, or fashion. If they don't have a gun, it'll be a knife or a car or whatever. So we're going to have to really work hard this session and take a close look at a lot of the pre-filed bills that's already out there and some of the others that'll be coming, and let's try to come up with a way to sensibly address this and fix our problems without, you know, taking shortcuts or trying to take shortcuts.
Yeah, and, you know, the people in these communities, they're just looking for answers, too. And, you know, you would think there would be some kind of visceral pushback against what some of the lawmakers want to try. But Representative, it sounds to me like that there's a lot more. I guess the point is elections have consequences in these cities. If you keep electing these kind of mayors, you're going to get what kind of comes with it. But I think you're starting to see a trend, at least some rumblings in the bigger cities in Alabama against this sort of, I don't know, the era of George Floyd and the response to it. And they're kind of ready to get back to maybe the way things used to be done when it wasn't the best of circumstances, but it sure was a heck of a lot better than it is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that we've got to take some common sense approach to this. And, you know, we really need some law enforcement leaders across the state that's willing to step up and say, we are going to protect our citizens. We're not going to tolerate any crap from.
Did we lose you, Representative? We may have lost Representative Stringer there. Yeah, he dropped. Anyway, we're going to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
We're going to do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm East Kind of.
Amarillo by morning, up from San
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. It was a long go. It was a long weekend, guys. For some reason, I forgot to mute my phone. It was a long weekend for me, so we're catching up here after a trip to the planes that didn't go too well. Ask him about. I should ask. Sorry, Senator, I missed asking him that question about stop and frisk. Let's see, Chris. I'll bet you 20 push-ups that she has the questions that are going to be asked in the debate, referring to Vice President Harris. Maybe she does, but I don't think her performance. I don't think she is. She could have the answers to the questions and try to put together the best performance, but we're sort of an electorate right now. It's like this: your mind's made up, probably, and if your mind isn't made up, you're not really judging anybody on policy. It's all stylistic. It's going to be appearance, aesthetics. She's just got to put together like a good acting job and not get trapped in her own like circular word salad. She's got some issues to overcome, and she's done it before. That's just what you need to know. This is what's important, that she's shown in past debates. She's had some good moments and she's had some so-so moments, but that's the most likely outcome tomorrow night, Chris, is as such, even if she has the answers to the question, people are just going to walk away from it. Well, my mind's not changed. Nope. We know what you're getting. It's sort of like this, and you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, you know, ever since we started doing debates, there used to be some subtle differences between the two parties. I think the two parties now are more ideological, and you're not really looking at you're right wing or left wing. There's no like, well, I'm a moderate. You may be moderate on an issue or two here and there, But, I mean, there's sort of this traditionalist view of America that we adhere to the culture that has, you know, been with us for decades and decades. And then there's a, hey, we need to change these things. We need to start having, we should start having, like, the genderless culture, men or women signs on the bathrooms, boys playing girls sport. Everybody is equal regardless of biology, regardless of anything. And things sort of break down from there. But nowadays, people know, so they know where they stand in life. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Moore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Text line 251-343-0106. Hit me up there. Got a bunch of them to get to. We will do those shortly. Coming up, Del Jackson, WVNN, about a half hour from now, WVNN, a radio station in Huntsville. Well, actually, more like the towers of Decatur, so probably that's more appropriate to describe it as a Decatur station, but North Alabama. And then finally, in that 11 o'clock hour, my buddy Rob Holbert, we're going to talk about this, I don't even know. The Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs, and there are some people down here in our way that are just, they are ready to go over this. The governor taking a board member, Kilpatrick, off the board. And then call for the resignation of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, or Kent Davis, Admiral Davis. And it kind of comes down to this. I mean, there's a turf war between the ADVA, the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Alabama Department of Mental Health. There's substantial money involved, opioid settlement, et cetera. And the governor, really what had happened, interagency squabble. And it looks like the governor's picked her side. And despite the governor having picked her side, the other side persisted. They went as far as filing an ethics complaint. As we know, it got dismissed. And you have this kind of pettiness going on, I think, all across the board here. It's not really helpful to the cause, but it doesn't matter. It's still ongoing. I feel like the governor, and maybe I'm totally off base here, I don't know, but I feel like the governor, whenever you get on her bad side, whenever you defy her wishes, let's say, now you could be incompetent, see John Cooper, you could be corrupt, you see the prison system. As long as you do what the governor tells you to do, you'll be fine. And half the time she's not really even that hands on. However, she says, like, I want to do this. And then somebody in state government says, no, I want to do this. And let's say, for example, the Secretary of Early Education, remember she had these books, this literature that was woke, and the governor didn't want anything to do with it. This individual decided to proceed, as if nothing, that didn't matter, and the governor cut her loose. We talked about this last week on the show with our returning champion. State Senator Elliott, who got removed from a board or the ATRIP 2 committee because he wasn't on board with the goofy $6 toll on the I-10 bridge. And she got upset. She got her feelings hurt. She removed him and put Vivian Davis Figures on the board. I think that's what's going on here. To be honest, I think she said, this is the way I want to do this, and you're going to do it my way. I want the Alabama Department of Mental Health playing quarterback here. Now, put that aside from like, you know, what's the best policy here? She doesn't care. That's not important to her. You follow her chain of command. You do what she tells you. Or there's repercussions. So we're seeing this little kind of political skirmish. It's fascinating because establishment, Montgomery, all these lawmakers are kind of Team Ivy here. I just got a statement from Charles Murray, who is the Speaker's flack. Legislative leaders issue joint statements supporting Governor Ivy's call on ADVA Commissioner Kent Davis to resign. And it cites Alabama Legislative General Fund Chairman Greg Albright and Rex Reynolds, the Chairman of the Senate Veterans and Military Public Safety Committee, Andrew Jones, Chair of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, Ed Oliver, and they say, hey, you got to go, Admiral Davis. And throw in Greg Reed and Nathaniel Ledbetter, the pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. Not a lot of support up in those circles in Montgomery. However, you talk to people down this way, you talk to people all around the state, and they tell you that the system is there's just a gross grab of money here, grab of power. I don't know what to tell you other than we'll see it play out, but the governor's going to win this one. Elections have consequences. She's the governor. And even when she should take a hit, she doesn't really take a hit. She's a lame duck governor. What's the worst thing that's going to happen to her? But if we're just matching toe for toe, you know, this is, we get the government we deserve. And Kay Ivey's made her decision. But removing a board member, John Kilpatrick, and then this Kent Davis, who's was asked for his resignation last week, and he declined. Now there's an emergency board meeting tomorrow. I'll be interested to see if there's going to be any kind of protest or anything like that, because there seems to be a lot of energy on the other side of this. But all the people with all these elected officials and bureaucrats seem to be on Team Ivy. Let me know what state, 251-343-0106. I could use a Haitian or two in my neighborhood. The crazy cat lady on the corner is getting a bit out of hand. That's from Michael. Maybe these Haitians can be rented out for a neighborhood cat control program. Mods, Jeff, you're not taking into accountability the American voter. Every Harris ad says Trump embraces Project 25, is going to be a dictator, and many more things taken out of context. The uninformed voter will eat garbage up and vote for Democrat. I don't know that's true. Maybe some, maybe a few. But I don't think that's entirely true. She's, a lot of these ads, Boz, are just white noise to people. Drunk Texter. already is the only thing that didn't get intercepted. Auburn last Saturday. LOL. Boy, you are drunk this morning. Aria. That wasn't me. That was Spellchecker. Terry, when someone of integrity tries to shed light on unethical behavior in this state, they get fired and slandered by political hacks. I don't know, Terry. I don't understand. Was it probably a wise decision to file an ethics complaint against the Alabama Department of Mental Health? Did you think you would get justice in the Ethics Commission? Why would you ever have any sort of faith and confidence in this Ethics Commission? But the chain of command goes as such, and these are military people. She's the governor. And you kind of should do what she says, I guess, but that doesn't mean we can't criticize her. And we should criticize her. There's ways to do it. I think Admiral Davis and John Kilpatrick are much better standing right now if they hadn't tried to undermine the governor's authority. That there would be sufficient public backlash. Hey, what are you doing here? You're giving it to this, we don't know, woke. I mean, go look at the Alabama Department of Mental Health social media, and you'll see how, like, it's clearly trying to be woke and trying to be hip or whatever. Just look at what they use money for when they talk about mental health. Or do we want to put this opioid settlement toward veterans? I think, had they not tried this, like, sort of trick play to undermine the governor, or her wishes, that is, maybe not her personally, we could stand here today and say, what the hell is the governor doing? Removing these people, these good people. But instead, it's going to be like, well, we can't have somebody that's not playing team ball on the team. Terry also asked, which accent is Kamala going to use at the debate? I bet it changes at least once. John, the problem is, what if I'm pro-life and really the labor unions? One has nothing to do with the other. Issues such as abortion are not on the 2024 ballot. You vote for the person who believes is most likely to approve your position. But even if your person loses, you still have the right to oppose the winner's position on the issue. Even if supporters holler at you in public at a protest saying words like, we won, so F you. You do. But I find it to be this. I mean, the media do this, and this is why you have this perception, John, that all Trump supporters, it's like a monolith. They're like all they all speak and read out of the same hymnal and talk the same way, and they all live in the same trailer park. I don't know, like, the way they are portrayed. And they're kind of that stereotype is what you're running into. You're pro-life and friendly to labor unions, or labor and unions, which is, I don't think that's necessarily a contradiction. I think you say that all in the Midwest, but people don't necessarily vote social issues like they once did. Or if they're voting social issues, they're on the other side of the social issue. They're voting for gay marriage, and there's, you know, a lot of times these pro-lifers just stay home lately. Dirt digger. No, Governor Meemaw is connecting with her Democrats that she used to be in the red state, in this red state, because she is not running for re-election again. I just think it's personal with her. Like, you just don't get on her bad side and do what she has certain expectations, or you're not on. And she's like, I don't ask much. Like, you could be corrupt. You could be incompetent and bad at your job, but you will do what I tell you to do. So-called leaders in Montgomery are as worthless as the blue-haired old lady governor, that from Jerry. Matt, morning. Jeff. The fact that a lot of these politicals are coming out kowtowing to the governor makes me wish that the board and the veteran groups and advocates will dig their heels in and hold the line. Obviously, something's not right, and they need to stand up to her. And then, once again, Chris writes, says, social media, do what you say, because Governor Ivey is a head, you know what, in charge. She is. And for some reason, she has commands a lot more respect than Governor Bentley ever did, and probably even Riley before him. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I didn't mean to treat you bad. Didn't know just what I had. But honey, now I
welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106 from Yellowhammer News and WVNN News Talk up in Huntsville. Dale Jackson coming up in the next segment, so please stay tuned for that. But back to this governor dust up, and tomorrow there's going to be a board meeting, so I guess like if you're preparing for the presidential debate, you'll get to at least to see some high drama with the Department of Veterans Affairs and this board. The way this works in Alabama, and maybe it should be a cabinet position, but it is the commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the commissioner of Veterans Affairs, is appointed, or is he's appointed to the board. He's appointed to that spot as commissioner by a board. And what has going to have to happen here, the governor asked for Davis's resignation tomorrow. There will be a board meeting, but the dirty little secret here is the governor gets to pick who's on the board. So really, it's the governor's really your boss by like one degree of separation. And she's called a board meeting, and it is this turf war between the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Mental Health. And the mental health commissioner, Kimberly Boswell, there's a lot of accusations out there about who she is teaming up with, who she's working with. And it's a turf war over money. Money for mental health, the opioid settlement, I think some ARPA money. The allegation here is that the commissioner has misappropriated federal ARPA money, and it's going to get Alabama in trouble with the feds. However, they insist the other side, the team Kent Davis side, insists that this is just a money grab. That's just an excuse or whatever to relieve him of his duty. And there's a groundswell of support outside of establishment Montgomery on the Davis Kilpatrick side. Now you look at this and you think about all the problems in the state, and why is this dust ups commanding so much attention from the lawmakers, from the governor, the media not really paying that close attention to it in this state, but it's a fascinating turf war to watch from my perspective. But I just think it's a matter of, this is my take, you got to do what the governor tells you. She wants you to do something. She doesn't ask much. Just look at the Alabama Department of Transportation. Look at the Alabama Department of Corrections. Any state agency, go down the list of these state agencies that are under the governor's umbrella and just look at all the problems, DHR and whatever. But this is where we're going to have this fight, like once and for all, who is in charge here. May not be a good look for anybody, but I don't think it's necessarily a good look for the governor, but it does, I think, send a message to a lot of bureaucrats out there. Hey, I don't think you want to, you know, if you're appointed by a board or you're appointed by her, I don't think you want to get on her bad side, because once she gets in it, she's in it to win it. But we'll see. Like I said, there's a lot of support on the other side. And what will this look like tomorrow in Montgomery, for those of you keeping track of this? But Rob Hulbert, we're going to talk about that later on with him. He has a much better understanding of this. I read his Sunday brunch newsletter. And, like, if you're listening to the Mobile Mornings last week, like, he's talking about this story. And then later, a few hours later, after his appearance, the ante is up with the removal of John Kilpatrick and the request for a resignation of Kent Davis. Let's get a break in here. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
The Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106 to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me. Joining us now on the line from Huntsville, WVNN and Yellowhammer News. You can read it online, yellowhammernews.com. Dale Jackson. Good morning, Dale. How are you?
I'm excited. I'm thrilled to be here. We got a debate coming up this week. It couldn't be any better. How wonderful, how great, how beautiful. Let's go, as the kids say.
It's kind of exhausting, isn't it?
It is, in a way.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, not this week. Can you do it next week? I mean, it's just me. So I have no expectations for that. I guess it could go either way. Everybody says, well, Donald Trump's going to be disciplined and everything, but everybody's anticipating she's going to have her moment. These debates are never quite like we expect them to be, I don't think. Something always happens.
Yeah, we're always expecting to have some sort of, like, big moment, like, come, I'm speaking. And apparently they're not going to get that moment, so they're going to have some other contrived Kamala Harris powerful woman moment. And Donald Trump has to decide which Donald Trump does he want to be. The one that looks at them and says, I have no idea what that person just said. Or the person that says, you're a fake Indian. Which one does he want to be? And does it really matter at the end of the day? I think this one matters a lot, just like the last one mattered a lot.
Well, the last one, Jeff,
I mean, let's be real. The last debate was the most consequential presidential debate in American history. I mean, there's no other way to look at it, especially if Trump wins. It's maybe if he doesn't win, it's still the most consequential. People talk about the Nixon and Kennedy debates. Yeah. There's a lot of debate about how many people actually saw it on TV and you know, whether or not the media just spun a narrative about how haggard, you know, Nixon looked, and everyone else just kind of went along with it. Just like Vietnam was an unwinnable war, or, you know, none of that's true. But we just had guys tell us that, and everyone's like, yeah, that's the way it is. And our people in our journalism classes told us Walter Cronkite was a journalist. And I think that's a lie, too. So you never know what you can trust from the past. We're living it, though, right now.
Right. And you know, a weird debate in June with the presidential election, not until November. I mean, it may be the most consequential, but I mean, it wasn't in the heat of the election cycle type of debate, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, you're absolutely right. But I mean, look, Donald Trump either knocked out Joe Biden, securing himself a victory, or securing himself a defeat. I mean, that's really it. I mean, that's as simple as it is. If he knocked him out, I mean, he just showed he was an inevitable powerhouse. If he knocked him out and he loses, then it shows that he knocked out the weaker enemy, and she came in and stomped the yard. I mean, that's all that matters. That's where we're at.
Yeah, they're going to, like, slay Queen Kamala Harris. I mean, it's whatever there was just no way they could make it a Rorschach test with Biden. I mean, it was really bad last time, but
Right. I mean, just think about this. They did a thing on, I think it was CNN, where they asked all their political analysts how it went, and like a half of them said Trump won, and I think the two-thirds of those that were left said it was a draw, which it clearly was not. And then the other, like, one-third said Biden won. And you know, when you get numbers like that, you know it's a blowout, right? So, I mean, it was sort of inevitable. And look, I look at these things sort of like I look at elections. You got to win by a big enough margin that the other side can't cheat. I mean, that's basically how you have to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so I mean, that's basically where we are in all of this.
So I was watching MSNBC, and like you could tell they were actually kind of being a little honest about it, and how all their like quote unquote sources were telling them that they had problems. And CNN must be the news network for dumb people.
I mean, yes, I think that's probably true.
Yeah. Kind of perusing your Twitter feed in my preparation for this segment. You a big believer in the Nate Silver forecast?
I'm not a big believer in it, but I think you saw on Twitter where I said he got it less wrong than everyone else in 2016. He had his predictor had Hillary Clinton winning 71 out of 100 races. The New York Times, I think, had Hillary Clinton winning 92 out of 100 races. You know, that's what it actually means. It doesn't mean the pollings were showing 92-8 or anything like that. And look, he has Trump up at 63. And your premise, I can't wait to see how you're going to wiggle out of this, Jeff, but your premise has always been, you know, and you're not wrong here, but your premise has always been, if I'm correct, the pollsters and guys always get it wrong against the conservative, against the Republican, especially against Trump. Well, always get it wrong in that direction. And they poll, if that's the case.
My quibble is this, and it maybe the outcome is right or wrong. It's not necessarily that. I think they do the methodology wrong. I think that they put an emphasis on Democrat voters. And here's what I think some of these models are showing, or what they're trying to do with this modeling with these pollsters. Some of them probably think they're going to get Obama-era turnout. She's black. She's a female. And we will see, because of that, really higher, much, much, much higher African-American turnout, probably something that is comparable to Obama in 08 or 12. I don't know that that's true. And I think before this now, I always thought when they tried it with Hillary and Biden, thinking they were going to get Obama-era turnout, because that's what some of these polls did, like Quinnipiac and so forth. It just didn't come to be, and that's where they got off track. Now, does Kamala Harris drive out Democrat voters like who? Better than Hillary, better than Biden, but is she up there with Obama? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, if that's your premise, and like I tend to agree with you, what do you think about Nate Silver, Mr. Smart Guy?
It's a little too rosy for Republicans, I think. But like, if you listen to him talk about it, and he will say this, he will say that there is a margin of error in some of the polls is bigger than the actual stated margin of error when it comes to determining, like you know, the voter enthusiasm for example, for Trump. Like, some of these pollsters these political scientists have a hard time with this notion, Dale, that there are actually people out there who will go enthusiastically for Trump. I mean, just think about your average intellectual that designs these polls, and they look at humanity, they look at the population in a much different way. Like, how could anybody possibly vote for that man? And while they will ask, and they put forth an honest effort, I think, to try to determine like an accurate number, it's just their worldview is in their way.
Yeah, I mean, but if that's the case, I would also say that, you know, Nate Silver's worldview is generally in his way as well.
Well, I think he is trying to update his worldview. Now, maybe he's overcompensating for it.
That's true, but my point that I was making was not necessarily that he is leaning towards Trump, but he leans the other way. And you're saying that he's overcompensating maybe a little too much?
Right, like he's overcompensating for his own bias, or he's looking at these polls, and he's trying to, it's almost like too cute, but he's kind of basing it on, well, they got it this wrong in 20, they got it this wrong in 16, and therefore my model thinks it'll go this way, they'll get it this wrong in 24.
Yeah, all I know is this. If you are Kamala Harris and you're looking at this, you got to know that this ain't looking too good for you.
Okay, that's what I've always said, though. Like, what do you? And fair enough. I mean, what does she do? If you're Kamala Harris and you look at her campaign right now, I mean, like, what makes you think she's capable of a self-correction sort of thing? Now, the debate's going to change things, perhaps. But let's just play 50-50 chance that could go either way. Let's just assume that when you and I are talking on Sunday after the debate, that nothing really changed in the race. It was just kind of whatever you wanted to get out of it, which is a good chance that will happen. So we're on this trajectory with the Harris campaign. What do they need to do to put themselves in position to win the White House? And I don't know what, I mean, I wouldn't know what to tell them.
Yeah, I don't know either. And like you said, I think we're all going to take whatever we want out of this. That's probably correct. And I don't see much happening, which goes back to my earlier position of if you're going to play this game and you're a Republican, you better win so big that you can't really do that.
At least got to win big enough to where it's like five boxes in Detroit or Philadelphia or Milwaukee. Is it going to change the outcome of the election, right? That's what they or Atlanta. They got to make sure that they have a big enough lead that there's no – I mean, if Trump wins by 100,000 votes, they're not going to turn up 100,000, just random Democrat votes. That's hard to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Republicans are self-defeating. I mean, I if you go and you read the comments on my Facebook post on that, you'll see a whole bunch of like, oh, well, it's all who counts the votes. Republicans are screwed anyway. Republicans can't win anything. It's like, God, you guys are losers. Like listen to what you're talking. Listen to this behavior.
Let me add people
that have this self-defeated attitude here that doesn't do anybody any good. Not even, I mean, no, unless you're Trump and you're running scared, and I don't think he does that.
I have people listening to this show right now, Dale, that say they're not going to vote because it doesn't matter anyway.
Those people are called morons, Jeff.
Elections are rigged, and it's a pointless, a waste of my time.
Stop convincing me. They're morons. I already said that. I mean,
is that a real thing, though? Because everybody says, well, that's going to cost Trump the election. But, I mean, like 1 out of 100 people actually think that way? I don't know.
I don't know. It's 1%, right? I mean, I don't think it's that high. I don't think it's that high. I mean, anyone saying that is just an idiot. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. And I hate to name call because, you know, I just hate doing that. If you're out there making that argument as an excuse not to do something, I question your intelligence. And I think this, maybe you should stay home. Maybe you should. Maybe you should.
A lot of these people must be talk radio listeners, though, because there's quite a few in my small audience who say this, and I get it on the text line on a regular basis.
Well, that's, I mean, I don't know why you keep setting me up to call your listeners stupid, but that's a stupid thing.
Well, do you see that in your audiences?
I don't know. I hear it occasionally, and my response is, wow, that's stupid, so maybe I hear less of it. I mean, so I don't know. I think maybe there's a little bit of, you know, you kind of push that away. People stop giving it to you. So I don't know. I don't know. I think that mentality is, I mean, it's just like they cheated me out of everything and they've done it all. So I'm never going to try again. I just don't know if I buy that. I just don't. Do people think that way?
Dale Jackson joined us here on the line. Last question, Dale, kind of switching topics here. These Haitians, they seem to be showing up everywhere. Now, Sylacauga. And, I mean, I was filling in last week in Birmingham, and I had the local lawmaker there, Ben Robbins. Like, no one's getting any answers on this. There seems to be a lot of kind of hysteria around it, but also there's a lot of people there that are like, no, these people, there's nothing to see here. Don't be racist and go about your business.
Yeah, no, that's it. Don't be racist and go about your business. I mean, look, if you're standing up at a meeting in Albertville and saying they smell differently, people are going to call you a racist.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, this was, don't do that.
Don't do that. I mean, you got to be smart about this and how you handle it. If you're standing there and saying, hey, look, we don't want our school systems. I mean, I thought Congressman Adderholt from the 4th District made a really great point. He's like, do you even know what language they speak? Do you know what language Haitian immigrants speak? Do you know, Jeff?
Yeah, it's French Creole.
All right. And how many other people do you know that speak French Creole?
None.
Okay. So do you think the schools in Haleyville have a French Creole translation? No. So, I mean, you have all these, and I say that sort of in like a silly way, but I think he makes a really great point when he says that, because how do you deal with that? I mean, how in the world do you deal with it? Even if you have one, now you've got to bring in a French Creole translator of some kind. And not only are you having to figure out how to teach that child, you're also having to figure out how to teach that child English. So you've got all these different problems that you're creating. And then what about your police force? Do you have a translator there that speaks French Creole? I mean, just the language alone, you got a little bit of a problem here. And you know what? I think it's also okay. I mean, call me a bigot if you want to. I think it's okay for me to stand up and say, I don't want my community to change like this.
Let me tell you what's going on here.
And my point is, I don't think we should be subsidizing Pilgrim's Pride.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm glad they're an employer. But if this is what they're going to do, then are they really a net benefit to the community?
No. To hell with them, right? You have people like Archibald and I don't know who else, what's his name, Roy Johnson or whoever, and they're making a big deal about it, but it's nothing but a cheap labor play for these chicken processing plants who are not good stewards in the community at all, especially the environment. And what they, instead of paying whatever the going wage is in Albertville or Sylacauga or wherever they are showing up, and this is what draws these people there, and instead of paying the going wage to hire locals, because what could it possibly be in Marshall County? It can't be like, you know, really high like California or something. But still, they bus in labor to use these people as employees. And meanwhile, here's the dirty little secret. If you go look at Pilgrim's Pride and how much money the state of Alabama has given them to put their processing plants, and they give them tax abatements, they install their water and sewer infrastructure, they do all these things to bring these companies in with the idea that they're going to give jobs, but instead they're just bringing in labor from elsewhere. People should be upset about that. Yeah. And it's just don't use our natural resources to exploit our community. Don't do that if you're just going to bring in people from other countries to work there.
I mean, I'll put it like this. If you're going to hire Bubba, then we should help you. If you're going to import people to compete against Bubba, then no.
No, I mean, it drives wages down in the entire community when you do that. So if you're a worker at Walmart and they say, hey, you could go work at the chicken plant, it's nasty, gross work, but we'll pay you twice as much, well, then Walmart has no incentive to raise their wages, or whatever local employers are there in Albertville. It depresses wages across the board when they do this, because they're just importing cheap labor. And you have to look at the entire, like, kind of local economy of wages and supply and demand, and it is just there's a lot of other, like, reasons that aren't as obvious as why this is bad policy.
And also, apparently, in Springfield, Ohio, they're eating their pets.
Well, yeah.
Ducks and cats and dogs, and you're like, don't say that. You're not allowed to say that. It's like, here's a woman getting arrested for eating a cat. And it's like,
what are they barbecuing over there? It smells awful.
Well, I don't know. The whole point here is simply this. The idea why you put up with places like chicken factories and cat food factories and things like that is because it creates employment opportunities for your young people, and it creates employment opportunities for people who are unskilled. And you know what? Cool. I'm down with that. I think it's a damn good idea. But when you start saying, well, we're not even going to get them to work here anymore, and we're going to start importing labor from third world countries, sorry, no, that's not. And this whole thing about, well, they're asylum seekers, they came here illegally. No one's even debating that. They showed him at the border and they said asylum, and they said, you son of a bitch, come on in here. You know, that's what we've done. And it's just like, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. This is not for the best of the country at all.
Dale Jackson, folks want to find you online. They want to talk to you. They want to argue with you, whatever it may be. How can they do so?
At the Dale Jackson on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You can get me that way. You can listen to me on radio stations across this great state and on TV on the weekends.
And apparently, if you're walking around Tuscaloosa and there's a guy on game day wearing Florida stuff, he is your guy. All right.
I had one guy come up to me, Jeff, and say, hey, you must live really close here because this is the second weekend in a row I've seen you. And I'm like, that's
Dale Jackson, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll be in Auburn this weekend. Come on and say hi.
We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Monday. Coming up in the next hour, Rob Hulbert from Landyap. Making a, let's say rare, but semi-rare appearance on the program. Obviously, we got hot and heavy with the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll get into that with him. More of your texts, 251-343-0106. Keep them coming. We do appreciate the feedback. A named texter, first of all, Kamala is not black. So these people say the first black woman president are full of it. She's Jamaican and Indian. I don't know. I'm then going to say she's of African descent. That's the Jamaican lineage. But that's it's such a... And they take, I don't think that's a winning point. It doesn't do anything but really stir up conservatives that will vote for Trump anyway at best. But we can just agree to disagree, and then it's time to move on. I'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Monday morning. Hour number three begins right now. Still to come, Rob Hulbert from Landyap. That's in about a half hour, so please stay tuned. We'll get some of your texts, 251-343-0106. Okay, my two big topics this morning are the debate, sort of my preview, my hot take, my analysis, and the state of the race right now. A lot of talk about Nate Silver's prognostication that I think 69.7% chance Trump wins, 30% chance that Kamala wins, and a 0.3 something else happens. That seems to be what he's saying, but it's not a poll. That's just chances of winning. And earlier I used like a poker analogy. You ever watch the World Series of Poker when it's on TV or any of these like televised poker tournaments? And you look around the table and all of the hands, and then there's like a percentage right next to each poker hand, like who's got this percentage to win. And that's what the Nate Silver forecast is. The polls may say this, but Trump has a better chance of flipping other states to Kamala Harris's campaign does. The only state she can really flip right now is North Carolina. Whereas Trump is theoretically could win any number of states. I mean, long shot, New Mexico and Minnesota. start getting closer in. You could say maybe Nevada. You look at Wisconsin, then I'd say Michigan. And then the chances get better with Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Georgia. Well, Harris has to draw that inside straight, pick up all those, most of those states. I think maybe she could leave one on the table. Whereas Trump just has to pick up a few of them. And you look at the probability of that, and that sort of factors into what Nate Silver 538 blog says. So we got that, and then we got the dust up with the governor and what will probably be the last hurrah of Veterans Affairs Commissioner Ken Davis. A lot of strong feelings on the Davis Kilpatrick side, but establishment Montgomery is lining up behind the governor. I've gotten text messages and listened to interviews all week. This is the governor's fight, and she's determined to win it. And these lawmakers seem to be wanting to get on board with the governor. You can read 1819 News, 1819news.com. We're trying to add some balance to this. But there's a lot of upset people out there. And it's kind of strange to me. We're not really, the media don't seem like they're covering both sides. Well, I say this, the media probably don't care. I mean, it's a big deal to a lot of people, but every so often you have the governor needing to make a statement. This is one of these statement sort of news cycles with her to show that she's in charge. She's the winner of the election, and that you're going to get on board with her. And if you don't get on board with her, if you defy her, if you try to undermine her will with an ethics complaint of some sort, then it's going to go the other way for you. But it doesn't mean it won't be without some hurt feelings. We'll see how that goes. A board meeting tomorrow. We'll talk about that with Rob here in about a half hour. Text line, what do we got here? Unnamed texter. Guys, I hope I'm wrong, but I believe the bad actors have 10 million plus votes already to apply whenever necessary. The open border is the source. Not really. I don't think so. Unnamed texter, like, yeah, maybe you have a bunch of illegal immigrants here that are flying under the radar, but do they want to fly above the radar and get caught on radar to go vote for a Democrat president, or do they just would rather to work in the shadows? That's why I've always been somewhat skeptical. Always somewhat skeptical of the election's fixed, and we got 10 million, and it's all illegal voters. Now, look, it's a long-term play for the left, for the Democratic Party. It's the long game. This isn't today that they're going to have these 10 million votes. They're going to show up that didn't show up in the last cycle. It's going to be gradual. But what we're seeing, demographic shifts, yes, but the longer these immigrants are here, maybe they're multi-generational, they're starting to go Republican. This was true with, like, the Hispanics in Florida, which fled communism. But it's becoming true with these immigrants here along the Texas-Mexico border. You're starting to see Republicans have a shot. Now, some of that they'll fix with redistricting, but there is a shift underway. But it's a long-term play for Democrats. They think the more immigrants they import, ultimately they will vote Democrat. Maybe it won't be these immigrants themselves, but maybe their children. Jerry. Those state-supported chicken plants also treat their producers like slaves. Yes. There's a great story about that Erica Thomas wrote at 1819 News, 1819news.com. Summerdale Tony writes, I agree to government stopping incentives to bring companies. On the other hand, as a business owner myself, the pool of people that you would have to hire from on that type of job is very unstable. I can see why they would bus in motivated workers. Yeah, but Senator Tony, you're not getting a handout from the state that I know of. Maybe you are. But if you aren't getting a handout from the state, that's one thing. But if the state is incentivizing you already to locate your facility in this location, or any location throughout the state of Alabama for that matter, and I know Pilgrim's Pride has gotten state incentives here, you need to be hiring local labor, okay? Your business is subsidized by the taxpayers of this state, not for you to make use of a bus stop somewhere, but to hire people here. Well, you should always try to hire locally. Maybe you can't, just is it feasible? But I'd say pay more. These chicken plants need to pay more instead of chasing cheap labor at the expense of the taxpayers. At the expense of and by the expense of the taxpayers. Terry, Justice Selection is all about emotion for most. That is why we see as such close polling. Those of us who do our own research and work off the facts are left behind. This seems to be the trend for American politics. But, I mean, just because you do your homework doesn't make your vote worth more than someone else's. That's just the reality of it, Terry. They pay taxes just like you. You choose to take it a little more seriously, but not everybody does. But you can be a productive citizen. You can pay your taxes. You can support your family. Maybe even put a little bit into offering plate at church. You're just not interested in politics. And sometimes it's on purpose. They just kind of turn you against it. By, you know, all the actors and all the controversy. Jim, good segment with the last guest. Haven't been able to listen for a while, but the segments seem much shorter and commercials much longer, approaching Rush standards. Just an observation, no need for a capitalism lecture. Good show, just not enough. Well, I would I would respectfully disagree, Jim. I don't know. I've been guest hosting a little bit around the state, and my segments are pretty long compared. But thanks for the kind words. Unnamed texture would... What if amnesty is promised? You mean vote and participate in the election if they promise amnesty? I think it's excuse making. I think saying that, well, we would have won if it weren't for all those illegals is excuse making. I think that there is some cheating. At times, I think that happens. It's just sort of all elections have some degree, or all national elections, I should say, presidential elections have some kind of degree of cheating, be it wherever. But it's very, very difficult to rig a presidential election. 2020 is the closest we ever came to it. Because they kept moving the goalposts. They changed the rules. They used COVID. Democrats used COVID to their advantage. Because, and I'll explain this to you again, the problem the Democrats have, they may have the numbers. They have the voter that's not as reliable. It's a low information voter. I think people are liberal because they just, they think they know more than they do, but they don't. But to them, but it doesn't, voting doesn't really matter to them in their life. Getting, you know, if you tie Taylor Swift tickets to it or something, they go camp out for a month. but such is the culture. But the people who tend to say they're Democrat voters, it's hard to get them to the polls. The Democrats will readily acknowledge this. So what do they do? Well, they need more chances to get them to the polls, so they expand the voting period. Ultimately, a name texter, say Alabama expanded its voting time, and we had early voting like Florida did or has, it would just get more Republicans out. I think your early voting is a reflection of your state. And in swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, it probably would draw out more Democrat votes. In Pennsylvania, it probably does draw out more Democrat voters. In Georgia, it may, I don't know. But this is what they did in COVID. They moved the goalpost, particularly in Pennsylvania, required a bunch of other states suing the state of Pennsylvania, and the Supreme Court just kicking it, punting it, which gave these election fraud deniers a chance to say, well, the court looked at it, and they said that there was nothing there, therefore there was nothing there. It's one of the most, like, if you even, like, start down that path talking about, well, you know, the 2020 election, there was all kinds of, what are you talking about? Democracy? Why do you hate democracy so much? How dare you hate democracy?
Once was a thought.
Go to Russia, you traitor. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Ford Show on FM Talk 106.5.
But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks, he asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit. Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Programming note, coming up tomorrow on the show, John Wall, Alabama Republican Party chairman, and the goal is to get Caroline Dobson on again, talking about her race and where she is, and maybe encourage some of you to come along on her effort. And a guest to be named later, still working on that. We'll see where that goes. 251-343-0106. Michael with the influx of Haitian folks. Is there a chance our local Chinese buffets are going to end up having to up their prices because of the extra competition for their main protein on the menu? I detect some notes of a jest or perhaps maybe an implied racism. I don't know, Michael. But point taken. I don't know. This Haitian hysteria. Who's more hysterical about this? There's some hysteria by those on the right in these communities. But my Lord, the other side, the John Archibalds of AL.com and others, the freak out is like, how dare you question these people coming into your community? Bill Britt. It's a total lack of, well, I don't even know that I don't think they've given it much thought other than this. Hey, here is something going on in Alabama that involves probably the usual bitter clinger crowd, and here's our opportunity to shame them and tell them they're wrong. That's all this is. It's like, hey, you got to, like, you got to do better here. We don't like it when our community has these unrealized burdens Or maybe they're realized birds. You just don't care enough to, you just got to put these people somewhere and sorry, this is the way it's got to be. When what you ought to be doing is refusing entry into the country or whatever it may be. Handle, if you're going to have an asylum seeker status, if you're going to grant people asylum, if you're going to grant, especially from Haiti, which is not great to be in Haiti, but there's a lot of bad places in the world. We're going to take every 2-bit, 10-bot dictator-led countries, refugees in the United States. Is that the stated mission here? If so, I mean, you need to adapt your policy, and you haven't. The Biden-Harris administration has not done anything to make this easier, to make this work. They've instead, the approach seems to be, well, we have these people here, and yes, they're culturally very, very different, but let's just inject them into communities all over the country, and we'll see how it goes. Oh, you want some added law enforcement protection? Oh, you want a translator? No, sorry. Hey, guys, you're on your own. I think there's a legitimate gripe there. And then people just don't want their communities changed. I mean, is that fair game? Is that fair? A lot of people would just say, well, no, you have to appreciate all cultures that are different than yours. And if you don't, well, you're just a bigot. Well, I don't have to appreciate anybody's culture. I can acknowledge it, but maybe I don't want any part of it. Maybe I don't want to see this in my neighborhood. I don't need the worry about. I don't know if they're eating people's pets. I have two dogs. Do I need to be looking over Hank and Harvey's shoulders to make sure that they don't wind up in a barbecue spit? I mean, if this is true, maybe it isn't. We'll see. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hand me my hat. Excuse me, man, but where's the door?
SRN News, I'm John Scott. The presidential debate is coming up. The 90-minute debate on Tuesday night at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. The ABC presidential debate simulcast live tomorrow evening on the Salem Radio Network. The National Hurricane Center in Miami says Tropical Storm Francine has now formed off the coast of Mexico, with a projected path to approach the coast of Louisiana. The center says Francine is located about 245 miles southeast of the mouth of the Rio Grande River and about 480 miles south-southwest of Cameron, Louisiana. Top winds at 50 miles per hour. And more than 36,000 structures are now being threatened by a wildfire in the foothills of a national forest east of Los Angeles. Stocks sharply higher. The Dow is up 626 points. This is SRN News.